As you guys have all seen, I just wanted to show you guys what it looks like on a Mac. When you open up System Preferences, it looks like that. It's organized into those groups with the little mini programs that you can run in there. One of the interesting things is they're all in this window, and as you click on it, it resizes. That is the System Press for the trackpad. I love what Apple did with this. If you click on these different items, this is actually a movie showing you how to do that gesture on the trackpad. So if you click on pinch, open, and close, a little movie plays right there showing you how to do it, which is brilliant. I mean, show people what they're supposed to be doing with this stuff. That shows the pref for appearance, network, pref, startup disk. And notice the size changes, okay, but it's still the same window. If any of you guys have ever gone into the control panel on Windows, right, and you open up one, and then all of a sudden you end up with all these little mini windows. You guys know what I'm talking about? Which just annoys the heck out of me. On the Mac, it doesn't happen. You're in the same window all the time. That brings us to the next big area, which is how to manage apps. On a Mac, there's two things that you use to manage apps. The first is called Expose, and that's the icon for Expose, which is, again, very nice. Expose allows you to view all open windows as thumbnails, or hide all windows to view the desktop. This is a little movie from Apple explaining how it's done.
When you're working on your Mac, you'll probably open lots of different files and applications. Expose can help you cut through the clutter and find things on your desktop fast. Hit the F3 key on your keyboard to activate Expose. It displays all of the open windows on your Mac, so you can quickly find the one you're looking for. Pressing Command plus the number 1 key arranges the windows alphabetically. And pressing Command plus the number 2 key sorts them by application name. Using Expose from the dock lets you see the windows of a specific application. So to see all of the open Safari windows, just click and hold on the Safari icon. To see the open Pages windows, click and hold on its icon.
Very nice.
Expose displays the windows in a grid on the desktop. You can view a full-size preview of any window in the grid. Just hover over the thumbnail with the cursor and tap the spacebar. Customizing Expose is simple. Just open System Preferences and select Expose in Spaces. You can assign keystrokes or mouse clicks to display all windows as thumbnails, to view all windows in the application that you're currently using, and to show the desktop. You can also set up active screen corners to trigger Expose functions just by moving your cursor to the corners of your screen. Taking advantage of all the great features of Expose makes it easier than ever to stay organized on your Mac.
There you go, that's Expose. And that brings us to Spaces. That's the icon for Spaces. Hey, you know what Spaces is? It's just virtual desktops. That's all it is. But they finally did it on Apple, and they did a really nice job of doing it. That's the control panel that allows you to do Spaces. You can have Spaces show up in the menu bar. You can have up to 16 Spaces total in any sort of grid format. The one thing I like is that you can pin apps to certain spaces. So I always have all my music stuff open on space number 2, and I always have like Twitter stuff open on space number 3, and so on. So that's kind of neat. And there's the F keys and the keys to get between spaces. And that's a screenshot I took today showing, you know, spaces. I have a dual monitors. So that's what my Spaces looks like when I view the whole thing pulled out. And notice, by the way, that that's Expose plus Spaces. So you kind of get the best of both worlds if you want. Let's move on to the internet now. Safari is the built-in web browser on the Mac. Look at that icon, by the way. And you can see the globe in the background, or at least North and South America. Pretty cool. Safari is built on the WebKit rendering engine, which is the same rendering engine that powers Google Chrome and Chromium and several other web browsers as well, but those are the two biggies. This is a screenshot for those of you who don't know what Safari looks like. I've got the tabs open there earlier today. Now, Safari has all the standard features you'd expect in a modern web browser: tabs, the search box, pop-up blocking, expandable text boxes, which actually I wish Firefox had. And that means if you see a text box and you want to make it bigger, you click in the bottom right corner and drag, and the text box just gets bigger, which is a really nice feature. Chrome has that as well. Autofill forms and RSS support. But Safari does have a couple of features that they've implemented in a very nice way. This is called Top Sites. Now, it's called Speed Dial on Opera. It's not like Apple invented this, but they did a very nice implementation of it where it shows you, you can actually go small, medium, or large there in the corner and see a huge number of the various websites that you've had open. You can remove them by clicking the X. You can pin them by clicking that little pin symbol, and that will stay there if you want. The other neat thing they did is they integrated their cover flow view into the history. So this shows you the history by day, and you actually can see the web page in the history view, which makes actually finding the web page you want much, much, much easier. By the way, Safari's nice. It's a fast browser. It's a nice browser. It's the best browser I know of for printing. So if you want to print something, I always open it in Safari because the printing looks spectacular. But frankly, for day-to-day use now, I switch to Chromium. I really like Google Chrome. It's just fast as snot, and there are extensions now for it, and it just does a beautiful job on lots of things. So I still use Safari a lot. I use Firefox a lot. I go mix and match. On my computer, I've probably got 10 different browsers, and I mix and match all the time. But Safari's a good browser. It's just day-to-day I've been using Chrome a lot more. Yes, sir?
One thing I like about Safari is that I'm able to open the current web page in whatever browser I have installed of my choice by going to the
the menus. Yeah, Safari does allow you, if you're viewing a web page in Safari, there's a develop menu, and you can go there, and it automatically knows about every other browser on your system, and you can open that web page in any of those. It's kind of cool. iChat is the built-in chat program, IM program. It supports AIM and ICQ, and it is licensed from AOL, so you don't have to worry about them cutting off access. Google Talk, Jabber, which is what Google Talk uses, RxMPP, and MobileMe. It also, though, supports text, audio, and video, so you can do video chats. It does a really nice job. What's kind of nice is that you can do single chats or you can do group chats, and you can do group video chats. And it does it very, very smoothly. And I wanted to show you guys a screenshot of this earlier today. Some of you guys know James Carton, my business partner, my best friend I've known since fifth grade, who's a complete, total pain in the ass. And so, and Craig, if you don't know, ask Craig or Robin. They both know him well. So earlier today, I'm like, hey, James, I need to take a screenshot of iChat to show these guys tonight. Do you mind if we open up one and I'll do a knock-knock joke? And he goes, okay, sure. So I did that, and that's what he did. I wrote, well, you can read it. I could have killed him. If you can't read it, good. Craig can tell you. Yeah. So it was not, I could have killed him. Ask Craig, he'll tell you, or Don. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip this video about iChat and go to this because I think this was really a neat function. A lot of people in here, we've all done the thing where you wanted to share a file with people and walk them through it. That's built into iChat. It's called iChat Theater, and it allows you to open up a movie, photos, presentations over a video chat session and walk people through it. So this is actually what it would look like. Your screenshot, you appear down here, and the file that you're showing them appears there, and people can actually follow along while you walk through a presentation or whatever you want. Really a nice little feature. Yeah?
Is iChat compatible with any other IM or chat?
Well, sure, if you hadn't been answering a phone call from your wife, you'd know that it's compatible with all those different networks. And there are Jabber gateways that allow you to hook it up to MSN and Yahoo.
Does that iChat Theater work with those or not?
I don't know that.
Okay.
That's a good question.
That was just...
I would assume if you can do a video chat, yes.
Okay.
I would assume, but I don't know. That brings us to multimedia apps. The Mac is definitely a multimedia machine. One of the biggest, of course, is QuickTime. There's a new version of QuickTime available on Snow Leopard called QuickTime 10 to match that. That is a screenshot of it. Very different interface. Now the controls hover over the window if your mouse moves over it, which I personally find annoying as hell, but that's what they've done. You can position them wherever you want, which is nice. It's been completely redesigned. It still, however, supports a very wide variety of audio formats. And it also supports an incredibly wide range of video formats out there. One of the cool things it now has as of Snow Leopard is it has built-in audio and screen recording. So if your mom calls you and she has Mac OS X Snow Leopard, and she's like, I don't understand why, you know, what's going wrong with this, you can say, Mom, open up QuickTime 10. Now go to the file menu and choose Record Movie. Do what you want to do, save it, and then from there you can upload it direct to YouTube, which is nice, or you can have it mailed to you or whatever. Yeah. Very nice. New movie recording, audio recording, or screen recording, whatever you want, using the built-in iSight camera. Very useful.
This is in the Pro version, isn't it?
No, there is no more Pro version.
Oh, there isn't?
No. Huh. QuickTime 10, there's no more free and Pro version. There's only QuickTime 10. But actually, there's problems, because QuickTime 10, QuickTime is actually a whole architecture of libraries that the Mac uses everywhere. The player, those libraries were completely redone and are better than ever. The player, though, I think they had to rush it out the door and they didn't finish it, because the previous version of QuickTime was QuickTime 7. They went to QuickTime 10 to match the branding. Well, they actually removed a bunch of features out of QuickTime 10 that were in QuickTime 7. So, for instance, you can't cut, copy, and paste a video, which is crazy. You can't. The editing is completely restricted now in terms of how you can edit. And you can't export. You can only export into four different formats. So in many ways, QuickTime 10 is a step back from the user perspective. From the underlying library perspective, it's a step forward. I expect that it will get better and they will restore these features. In the meantime, this is how bad it is. QuickTime 7 actually comes on Snow Leopard. It's in the utilities folder. So if you do need to edit your QuickTime videos, or you do need to cut, copy, paste, you have to open up QuickTime 7 to do that. And you can do it with that way. This is what I mean. It's trimming. That's it. That's the only way you can edit videos. You can trim it just like you do on your iPhone, and that's it. With the old one, you could say, okay, I've selected from here to here. Pull that out. I want to keep this and this. You can't do that with QuickTime 10. So it's things like that. Then in some ways, it's certainly smoother video, better quality video, but the interface is missing features. And as I said, I hope they add it. Brings us to iTunes. Most people in here probably know about iTunes. You either use it or have people that friends and family that do. It's a digital media player and organizer. It also manages the contents on iPhones and iPods. It also allows you to connect to the iTunes store to purchase and download music, videos, TV shows, apps, games, audiobooks, podcasts, and ringtones. And that's a screensaver. That's my music library on my on my laptop, iTunes. There are movies, TV shows. I don't have any TV shows. Podcasts, applications for my iPhone. Ringtones. Hey, shut up. Those are fun. Radio. I'm going to change your ringtone if you don't watch it. Radio stations. You can do streaming radio. That's all freely available as part of iTunes. That's the iTunes store where you can, again, purchase and download all sorts of things. Podcasts are free, by and large. So there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of podcasts, and it's a great interface for managing that. That's my phone. I had hooked up earlier today and managing the iPhone. And Genius is interesting. Genius creates mixes based on your library of songs automatically. So this is the punk mix. This is the blues mix. That's the vocal jazz. That's the jazz mix. Hard rock mix. Things like that. So it automatically creates these mixes. And it's really great. You just hit play and it just starts playing songs out of your library mixed in a really interesting way. So it's kind of fun to do on a Saturday afternoon. And that's Front Row, which shouldn't have showed up. I hit the wrong button. And excuse me one sec. There we go. That brings us to DVD player. Apple does include a DVD player to play DVDs. Can't play Blu-ray on a Mac. There's no built-in Blu-ray disc on a hardware on any Macs. And I predict there probably will never be, because Apple wants to leapfrog past that and get right to downloads. That's what Apple makes money off downloads. Apple wants to move to that. It wants to get past shiny plastic discs and get right to the download era. So I'm predicting, although I could be wrong, but I don't think I will be, you will never have a Blu-ray disc player on any Mac. You can buy third-party ones and plug them in. You can do that, but Apple will never include one. This won't happen.
They've also been critical of the...
licensing?
Licensing.
Yeah, Steve Jobs said, Blu-ray licensing, I quote, is a bag of hurt. So he didn't want to deal with it. So I did manage to take a screenshot of the DVD player today. I hope you appreciate that. I very carefully chose that disc and found that screenshot in there. But you can see the little player at the top, and there's the window. One of the cool features is it'll resume playing from where you paused or stopped. One of the really uncool features that pisses me off mightily is that screenshot of that movie, I actually spent like 20 minutes trying to figure out how to do it, because if you use the built-in screen grab program that includes with Apple OS X, that's what you get. It will not allow you to take screenshots of the contents of the DVD window. Everything around it, no problem. No DVD window.
Windows doesn't either.
Oh, Windows doesn't either? Okay.
No.
Third-party tools do. I mean, there's third-party tools. That's what I eventually had to use.
Right. Yeah. Even if a disc that I made myself, yeah, let me copy that.
Complete BS.
Sometimes that's a technical issue because the graphics card handles that video.
They do it for DRM purposes. They just won't. They just won't do it.
What do you use?
I used a program called Xscope, which is a kind of a graphics program that lets you line up windows and take screenshots and do things like that. But there's bunches you can do it with. Photo booth, some of you guys, I think there's on GNOME, it's called Keys. They got it from Photo Booth from Apple. That is a cool icon too. Photo booth allows you to take photos. What the hell? Who is that? Who is that degenerate?
Come on.
So that's earlier today. I hit that, see that button right there? You click that and you get a 3-second countdown, and then, boop, it takes the picture, and it's added. What's neat is that you can do several different effects. So you can do any of those effects there. You can do those effects. You can do these effects where it looks like you're in an aquarium or on a roller coaster or in front of the Eiffel Tower. And you can add your own, too. You can put a picture on there. It'll make that your backdrop, which is pretty cool. So I took some pictures today, and I hope you guys appreciate it, using these effects. That's the pinch effect. That's a good one. And this is, I've had too much mescaline, please God, I want to come down now, effect right there. So, photo booth's pretty fun. It's like a silly little app, but it's like tremendously fun to play.
Apply a bunch of those to your iChat session.
Oh yeah, you can use them on iChat as your icon. I mean, you can do all sorts of stuff with it. You can also do video clips. So you can also, you don't just record photos. You can record little short videos. Well, as long as you want, actually. You can record an hour of you talking if you wanted. That brings us to Front Row. Front Row looks like that. It fills up the entire screen. It's basically a media center software that does full screen display of movies, TV shows, music, podcasts, photos, and so on. It also allows you to directly download that content via the iTunes Store. This thing's great. I mean, I have a little Mac Mini at home, as I was talking during the break. It's hooked up to our HDTV, and all I do is you enable it, start it up, and it fills up the whole screen, and you can watch movies, listen to music, you know, TV shows, whatever, right through it, and it's great. The thing is, though, it's great unless you're like me and you have an enormous music library or you want certain features it doesn't support, because that's all it does. Well, there are now other options available. XMBC, which also runs on Linux, by the way, originally stood for, it's XBMC, I screwed that up. It's XBMC, because it originally stood for Xbox Media Center, although now it runs on Linux, Macs, everything. Really nice. Same idea. Well, some people took it and converted it to work on the Mac and improved it and called it Plex. Same thing for Vodler. Boxy is the same thing, but with a lot more social software, a lot more third-party apps. And to be honest with you guys, Front Row's nice, but I use Boxy. And Boxy, on January 7th, released a new beta, public beta. Anybody in here can sign up for it. This is free stuff, open source. It kicks ass. So Linux users, it's available on Linux, Windows, Mac, Get, Boxy. I love Front Row, but Boxy is a lots better. That shows you what you can do with it. Apps, there are third-party apps built into Boxy. You can listen to NPR, stream NPR. If you guys have a Netflix account, okay, and you like to stream movies over Netflix, you can do it right inside Boxy. You can do Hulu, depending on third-party apps. I mean, it's awesome. Yes. This is another showing you what Boxy, that's the new one as of a couple of days ago, shows you the weather. So I can't urge you enough, if you have a Mac, Windows, Linux, get Boxy and try it. It kicks ass.
Yeah,
it's really, really
able
great
to
stuff.
Stream Netflix on Linux with it now?
I don't know on that. I don't know. On the Mac, you have to install Silverlight, which...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you still can't stream.
You still can't on Linux? Okay. Even with Moonlight? Moonlight doesn't work? Okay. But it works great for me. Yeah?
If it's streaming for... streaming on a Mac, it's for Intel Macs, right?
Not oh, yeah. Yeah.
That'd be older.
Yeah, PowerPC is... No, that's not going to work. Yeah. Somebody else in their hand up? Yeah.
You want to talk about the differences between Boxy and Bodler, or just...
I don't know enough about Bodler to say. Boxy has got the Mindshare. I have used Plex. I have used Front Row. I have used Boxy. I really like Boxy.
Okay.
And it's free, so I mean, if you don't like it, you know, what are you out? You're out nothing.
There's no reason why we should even diddle with the other ones?
Well, first of all, Plex only works on a Mac. XBMC does work on others. I've tried XBMC. Boxy, I think, is a little better. But try them both. I mean, that's the thing. Try them and see what you think. Image capture is actually what, on a Mac, allows it to import pictures and things from digital cameras and scanners. This is actually usually hidden. Other things use it in the background, but you can invoke it yourself. And that's what it does. I'm not going to go into it in detail. iLife is Apple's suite of software that allows people to work with their digital media. And the first one is iPhoto. iPhoto is great. I have a lot of pictures in iPhoto. That's where all my photos go, and I've been very happy with it. I have a really large photo library. iPhoto has done a really good job with it. Have I gotten iTunes yet? I haven't gotten iTunes yet. No.
Yeah.
I have not.
You did.
I did. One thing I want to say about iTunes, by the way, iTunes is the best software I've found for enormous music libraries. I have 76,000 songs in my music library at this time, and iTunes handles it just fine. So if you're looking for something that handles really big libraries, I've been very pleased with it. Yeah.
One thing I found very annoying is that iTunes lets you select which music library to open when you start it up.
Mm-hmm.
And other applications that seem like they should offer that kind of an option.
So you can have multiple libraries.
Multiple address books, multiple photo libraries.
Yeah.
They didn't think to put that feature in them, too.
Yeah.
Hold the Option key down when you start iPhoto, it lets you pick a different photo library.
Oh.
Try holding Alt or Option down when you open stuff. You'd be surprised.
I tried that on iTunes. I mean, I thought I tried... Maybe it was a while back that I tried it on iPhone.
Yeah, Photo's done that for 5 years, maybe.
Okay, what about address book?
Address book doesn't.
Address book is one address book.
And iCal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, iCal's one iCal.
Those would be nice to have additional address books.
But there, for there, I just recommend using fast user switching.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So iPhoto is basically for photo management and editing. I'm going to show you a video about that real quick.
Free software is the best.
Sorry.
Sorry. Who's giving the talk here?
iPhoto 39. If you've never launched iPhoto before, the first step is to import your photos. If you already have pictures on your hard drive, you can simply drag them into iPhoto and importing begins. If you have photos on a camera or memory card, just plug it into your Mac. When you do, iPhoto will recognize it and show you the photos. Here, you can name the event where the photos were taken, and you can choose to import some of the photos or bring them all in by clicking this button. Once imported, iPhoto automatically organizes your photos into events based on the date they were taken. If you move your pointer over an event tile, you can see the photos inside. This is called skimming. To see all of the photos inside an event, just double-click it, and iPhoto will show you all of the pictures taken at that event. Most of us take pictures of friends and family. iPhoto uses face detection and recognition technology to organize photos by the people in your pictures. Here's how it works. Select a photo and click the name button. iPhoto will...
Notice it automatically detects the face, and it's pretty amazing when you do that in iPhoto. It will automatically find the faces. What's really fun, though, is playing the game of, oh, it thought that that fold in that blanket that does kind of look like a face was a face. You know, or that person, that crook in their elbow right there, and that wrinkly old lady, you know, that does kind of look like a face, and it'll make this little tiny square where it thinks there's a face. And you can go, no, that's not really a face. That's my grandma's elbow.
Rock on Mars.
Yeah, that too. So it does a really amazing job.
Well, I've already detected the face in the photo, and you can type in a name. In this case, it's Allie. When you move to the next picture, iPhoto recognizes the same face and suggests the name. Just click to confirm the name. You can add another name the same way. Just click and enter the name. In this case, Allie's mom, Claire. After you enter names on one or two photos, click Done. Then, click here to switch to Faces view. iPhoto will display a snapshot for each person that you've named. When you double-click on Allie's snapshot, you'll see the photos that you've confirmed contain Allie, and others that iPhoto recognizes might contain Allie. When you click Confirm Name, you can confirm the photos that are Allie with a click. If you see a photo that isn't Allie, just double-click. Confirming photos helps iPhoto suggest more possible matches.
And I'm going to have to skip ahead, but it's incredibly addictive, by the way, when you first start doing this.
Does it retain those names somewhere, so that you export the file? Oh,
yeah. No, it's stored in the iPhoto database.
Well, what's absolutely amazing is I've gone back to old libraries where my kids are there, and it finds the progression, and it does a very accurate job of saying that my kid at age 5 is the same as age 13, is the same as age 20.
Yep. I've done the same thing. I've got pictures ranging of a 5-year-old, and he's now 7. And there's big changes. Now, with my infant son, it did not do a good job, but that's because he was so beautiful that the brightness just over... No, it's because obviously babies' faces are unformed masses of goo, and so it has a hard time recognizing
it. Did iPhoto think it was Winston Churchill?
No. That brings us to iMovie. iMovie is movie editing, and it's got some pretty amazing features. Again, I'll show you a brief, quick little movie about it. I'm going to skip through some of it. This is fun.
Welcome to iMovie 09. This short video will show you how to import video from your camera and make your first movie. So let's get started. Once you connect your camera to your Mac, iMovie will recognize it and open an import window, which will look something like this, whether it's a tape or memory-based camera. With a flash memory camera, you can easily see all the clips on it. If you only want to import some of the clips, click Manual. Then you can check or uncheck Clips to Import. And when you're ready to import, just click Import Checked. Now, iMovie will ask you to name the event where this video was taken, like a birthday party, or in this case, our trip to San Diego. One last click of the import button, and the video is on its way from the camera into your Mac. To see the video that you just imported, click the name for the event here. When you do, its video will be shown in the event browser, which is where you can see thumbnails for all the video in the event. When you move your pointer across the film strips in the browser, you'll see the video that you're pointing to in the viewer. This is called skimming. If you see some video that you want to play, just tap the space bar and iMovie will play it in the viewer. When you're ready, the next thing to do is to begin to edit your very own movie. To do that, skim video in the event browser until you find a section that you want to use. Then just click, and iMovie will automatically select a 4-second piece of the video. We'll make this the first clip in our movie by dragging and dropping it to the project window at the top left of the screen. The project window is where you create your movie by simply dragging in different pieces of video from the event browser. To use more or less than 4 seconds of video, just click and drag to select the portion that you want. Once you have a few clips in your project, you can change the order by simply dragging them around. Or to remove a clip, just select it and hit the delete key on your keyboard. In the media browser, you can find your music, your photos from iPhoto, titles for your movie, and transitions. To add music to your movie, just find the song you want to use. You can even search for a song title to make it easy to find what you're looking for. When you find it, just drag it to the project window and drop it on the gray area. The music shows up as a green background behind the clips in the project window. The final step is to give your movie that Hollywood fit and finish by adding a theme. To do that, choose File, Project Properties. Then, in the sheet that appears, choose a theme. When you move your pointer over the theme tiles, you can see a preview of what each theme will look like. To automatically add transitions and titles to your movie, just check this box. Click OK to apply the theme to your movie. In the project window, you'll see that iMovie added titles and transitions to your movie. To change the title from the default text to your own, just select it in the project window. Then, in the viewer, double-click on the title and type in your own. Now it's time to check out your work. To see and hear your movie in full screen, just click the Play Full Screen button and enjoy the show.
What do you guys think? Aren't these videos nice? You see what I mean? I mean, I bet right now I could set anybody of you guys down in front of iMovie and you could get something done just after watching this little video. You know? So that's what, I mean, that's just amazing. One more quick technology I want to show you about iMovie. And this is amazing. And very useful.
Sometimes it's hard to hold the camera steady when shooting, and you end up with video that's too shaky to watch. iMovie can help fix that. The first step is to analyze your video. Just select Analyze for Stabilization from the File menu. You can do this to an entire event or to a single clip at a time. This is a sophisticated process, so for larger events, it may take a longer period to process. Once your event is analyzed, iMovie will add a wavy red line to video that's so shaky that you probably won't want to use it. And you can easily hide all of that video by clicking this button. For all the other video in your event, as soon as you put it into the movie, the video will automatically be stabilized, so it looks nice and smooth. If you want to adjust the stabilization, you can do that by double-clicking the clip and then adjusting this slider. The further left you drag, the less stabilization iMovie will add to the clip. And by unchecking this box, you can turn it off altogether. iMovie can help smooth out shaky video so that you can still enjoy and use it in your projects.
What do you think?
Wow.
Pretty cool, huh? Yeah. By the way, I noticed this gentleman right here is the Gateway Macintosh User Group iMovie SIG head. If you want to learn more about iMovie, hit him up after we're done. GarageBand, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on due to time interest. It basically allows you to do audio and music editing and creation. The one thing you can do in here, you can actually learn
Welcome
how to play
Band
instruments.
When you first launch GarageBand,
let me see if I can skip. I gotta skip it in the interest of time. But you can actually, it'll actually teach you how to play. You can actually download for a couple of bucks Sting teaching you how to play Roxanne on the guitar, Nora Jones teaching you how to play one of her songs on the piano, and so on.
Was that free or for a price?
It cost a couple of bucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome to GarageBand.
What?
Compare Audacity to GarageBand?
I only know Audacity, to be honest, because I have pretty simple needs, and Audacity is a very sophisticated program, but it meets my needs, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to have to learn a new program. And I think GarageBand is kind of, what's the one all the musicians use? Pro Tools. It's kind of like Pro Tools Lite is how I understand it. Like, iMovie is where beginners would start, and you can do very sophisticated things. But if you want to go pro, you're going to move up to Final Cut Express and Final Cut. Same thing. GarageBand is where you would start, but then you'd go up to Pro Tools or things like that. iWeb is Apple's website creator program. It allows you to create websites and edit them. I make websites for a living, so I spit on this program. But it in no way, shape, or form would do anything I would want it to do. You don't have good control over the HTML. It's not something for me. But for your average person that just wants to create a website that looks really cool and upload it somewhere, it's a great program. But I don't have time to go into it. iDVD is Apple's DVD authoring and burning program. It's really funny. If you go, it's still part of iLife, but if you go to Apple's iLife website, they barely mention it. Why? Because Apple wants shiny disks to die. So they include iDVD, but they haven't really done anything to it in years. So it'll work, but count on it. I did want to talk really quickly about the new features in Snow Leopard. It is a 64-bit operating system. Apple updated almost every program and subsystem to run in 64-bit mode, so you can see the difference from Leopard to Snow Leopard. All apps that Apple provides are both 32 and 64-bit at the same time. You can choose either one, but the system will look and see what kernel you have and run the appropriate app. What's interesting is that by default, Apple boots into 32-bit mode on the kernel because the kernel extensions aren't available yet that are in 64-bit mode from all these third-party developers. However, what's cool is that all the 64-bit apps run just fine and dandy on the 32-bit kernel. So Apple's done a really good job with that, and people think that the next version is where it will boot into 64-bit by default after having given third-party developers a couple of years to get up to speed. Of course, one of the benefits of going from 32-bit to 64-bit is that your Mac can now access 16 exabytes of RAM, which there's a sale on 16 exabytes at Crucial this week. So if you go there, you can pick it up. Unfortunately, it comes in 1 million RAM sticks, so you have to have kind of a hard time getting it in. Grand Central Dispatch is a new technology from Apple. One of the big problems out there is, of course, and everybody in here knows what I'm talking about, we've had all these multi-core and multi-CPU machines for years, but software programmers still don't write their software to take advantage of those multiple cores. That's what Grand Central Dispatch is designed to solve. It's basically tools for programmers to make their software work with multiple CPU cores really easily. So Apple's trying to make it as easy as possible to take a lot of the headaches out of the hands of developers, so they just hand it off to Apple and they can do it. Another thing that Snow Leopard introduced is Chinese character input. Now, I know a lot of you guys are like, so? Well, this is actually kind of brilliant. The way they did Chinese character input before was with typing on the screen, right? Well, every Mac, a laptop now, has this wonderfully big, responsive trackpad. That's what you do now. If you want to do Chinese input on a Mac, you now write it on the trackpad, and it automatically detects and suggests what it thinks you're writing. It learns from what you write. So if you did do Chinese, that would be tremendously helpful. I mentioned earlier that Exchange support is now available in there in Mail, Address Book, and iCal. So let's think really hard right now. Which operating system supports Exchange out of the box for nothing? Yeah. On the one hand, Apple does, but on the other hand, Windows still doesn't. Malware protection. Apple did introduce some malware protection into Mac OS X Snow Leopard. It checks any file you download for danger and alerts you if it is on Apple's malware list. Does anybody know how many files are on the current malware list?
94.
Two. So there are two files. Apple can update it through software update, but that's it. Two files. One of them is a Trojan. Actually, I think both are Trojans. Brings us to the Finder, which we talked about earlier. The Finder's been rewritten to use 64-bit Cocoa frameworks. Therefore, it's faster, more responsive. I mentioned earlier that it now supports 512 by 512 icons. I want to show you guys some third-party icons that, thanks to this 512 by 512 support, are now available. That's a program called AppZapper. I would love to have that gun. Wouldn't that be cool? This is a program called 1Password. Little Snapper. What's that called? Can't remember. Transmit, which is a FTP, SFTP program. You can't see it up here, but if you look, you can actually see the treads on the tires.
Wow.
The treads and knobs on the tires. It's a little hard to see up there. That's my favorite SFTP program that I use. It's called CyberDuck. It's open source and free. And I love the fact you can actually see the seam on the plastic for the duck. That's Text Wrangler, a very nice text editor on OS X. And again, you can see the fibers and the rope. Smart Eject is a new feature in Snow Leopard. Everybody in here probably has had this on your Linux box, right? You try to eject a DVD or CD or a mounted volume, and something pops up and says it's in use, or it won't eject, right? So what do we all do? We open up Terminal and type LSOF. Actually, Stan, Stan's still here?
Yeah.
You're the one who taught me that a long time ago. And so you type LSOF, and it tells you, well, and the problem was, in previous versions of Mac OS X, you would try to eject something, and it would say, this disk is in use, and you'd be like, what's using it? And you'd have to open up the terminal and type LSOF. Well, the average Joe doesn't know about that. Well, now, if you try to do it, it actually tells you which program is using it, so you know which program to go quit to then eject the disk. That's really great.
Ubuntu does that now, too.
That's awesome. They should, all of them should. This is another cool feature that has, and I ask a question. When I first started going to Linux user group meetings years ago, I asked this question, and Stan basically said, nope, you're out of luck. Suck it. Nice, Stan. I've never forgotten that. It still hurts me right to the core. And I said, I've been using Linux now, and I'd like the ability to have a system-wide substitution program where if I type something in any program, it auto-expands. And Stan, you basically said there ain't such a thing in Linux. Well, now Apple actually includes it as part of the operating system. This works in virtually every single program, not just Apple, every single program on the computer. You check the boxes, the one you want to enable, you type this, and you get that instantaneously. Which is, as a writer, I use this all the time. Now, I don't use Apple's, I actually use a third-party one that I've been using for years and years, but for new people, this is great. There are also a feature, and this is an awesome feature, called keyboard shortcuts. I hope this impresses you guys. It does me. This is in the system prefs. You go to keyboard shortcuts, and it shows you all the shortcuts of the different programs. Well, notice you can change them. If you don't like Exposé to BF9, you can change it if you want. That's cool. If you don't like the built-in screenshot key commands, you can change it. That's cool. But here's where it really gets awesomely cool. This application shortcuts, you see that right there? So I don't know if any of you guys ever noticed this, but if you go to Firefox has this send link command, but there's no key command for it. Okay? So what do? I go back to that, and I click the plus, and that pops up. I say, Firefox, the menu command is send link. I want to use Command-Shift-I. I hit add. It's now added. And when I go back to Firefox, there it is right there. So you can add key commands to any command on your Mac you want system-wide.
Can you change
That's cool.
Already there?
I believe you can change the ones that are already there. I believe so. There's another feature that is awesome called Services. Services, you go to the Services menu, and I'm in Keynote, and it shows you things you can do inside Keynote. Or I go to the Finder, and those are things I can do in the Finder. Well, what's interesting is I right-clicked on an image file and go to Services, and these are all things I can do to that image file. So these are built-in commands specific to the program I'm using or the file I'm using. In fact, I did an experiment in Mail. I clicked on that URL, and these are the four services available for it. In Chrome, I clicked on that URL, and those are all the services you can do. Those are true for almost any text.
Now, services used to be available.
Services have always been available, but it was a mess.
Right.
The problem was they displayed every service no matter what program you were using or what you clicked on, which meant it was useless. You just had far too many to choose from, so nobody used it. Well, they finally fixed that. A, you can uncheck services you don't care about, and B, it's context sensitive by default. It only shows the appropriate services for the program you're in. And remember earlier, you can create your own services using Automator. So you see right there where it says RSG, I created that. It's super easy to do, and that's what I'm talking about. You can uncheck the ones you want, add new ones, and so on. There are the ones I've created down at the bottom there. I've got more than that. But those are the ones I have there.
And you can define a keyboard shortcut to them.
And you can define keyboard shortcuts for them as well. Yeah. Yes, sir. Now I want to talk. The last thing I want to talk about is the strengths that I see of OS X and Apple. First of all, it is Unix. That to me is a huge strength. That was one of the smartest things Apple ever did. You open up the terminal, it has a really good terminal program. You'll notice that I'm looking at the man page for Bash. I'm using SSH, I'm using Vim. It's all there under the hood. It's Unix. Usability. Apple makes their things incredibly simple to use. There's only one place to go to do things, unlike on Windows where there's 10 different places. You're not bombarded with clutter. Now, that could be a double-edged sword, of course. That could bother some people. You can customize your Mac in quite a number of ways, but it's not, you know, as crazily customizable as, say, KDE is. Consistency is a very powerful thing on the Mac. That is the print dialog, and one of the things I wanted to point out was that PDF button that allows you to save whatever you want as a PDF or PostScript is available in every single print dialog on the operating system. This right here, this little plus and minus to add or delete a shortcut, that is add, delete a text substitution, add, delete a network interface, add, delete a printer. So it's consistent that way. The menu commands are consistent. It always has the Apple menu, the name of the program, file, edit, and help on the end. The stuff in the middle can vary, but you can see between those. Very, very, very consistent. The menus are always consistent. Command S always saves. Command N is always new. Command O is always open. Command P is always print in every single program. So again, very, very, very consistent. Spotlight is available throughout the operating system. In the Finder, in Mail, in iTunes, in Dictionary. Efficiency. The Mac has fewer clicks and fewer steps to do things. If any of you guys, again, have ever gone into Control Panel in Windows, you know what I'm talking about. Learnability. There's something called Fitts' Law that says you want to have things in the same place all the time. This is one of the issues with Windows and Linux. The menus are in each window. In the Mac, the menu bar is always on the top, which means you just flick your wrist and the cursor goes right to the top where the menu bar is. You don't have to hunt for the menus. And it's just little things like that.
There's a big reason for that. Your actual total window is potentially 32 feet tall.
Right.
So a quick jam to the top of that 32 feet is a lot quicker than trying to figure out
where
you are.
Yeah. There's a saying about Macs, they just work. Talk to anybody in here that has a Mac. You don't have to futz with the hardware. You don't have to futz with getting things to work. They just work out of the box. And that's a fantastic thing, let me tell you, especially as you get older and if you have a kid. Excellent multimedia support. The Mac does a beautiful job with movies, pictures, multimedia in general. Multiple OS support. This is the last thing I'm really going to talk about. The best thing about my Mac is I can run Windows on it. I can run Mac OS on it. I can run Linux on it. I can run any of those. I can run them at the same time. Because of that Intel processor, Apple includes something called Boot Camp that makes it drop-dead simple to dual boot a Mac. When you boot, you see that Windows or Mac, and your end result is you're running Windows. I mean, you've dual booted into Windows. You can also do virtualization using a variety of tools, including the free open-source VirtualBox, which is actually what I use. So here I am on my Mac running Windows, and here I am on my Mac running Ubuntu, and they run great. In fact, you'll notice that there's a variety of choices for the host OS, but notice you can't run Mac OS as a guest OS unless it's on Mac OS X server, and that's Apple's licensing. Last thing, technical support. You can go to Apple's website, But the best thing about my Mac in terms of support is that is the Galleria Apple Store. And if I have a problem, I can go to the Apple Store at the Galleria. I will talk to a human being face to face that speaks English and that is allowed to use their brain and not read off a script like an automaton. And they will help you at the Apple Store. They do not screw you. They do not waste your time. If you go in there and show them that you are smart and know computers, they will treat you very, they treat everybody very well, but they will treat you with respect and resolve your issue. You go online, you reserve one-to-one training, allows people to get, for $99 for a full year, you go in once a month, you get an hour training on whatever you want from a person at the Apple Store. That's a great gift for a new Mac user. Once a month.
Week.
Once a week?
Week.
Used to be unlimited.
It's once a week now?
Once a week.
Holy macaroni. Okay, I thought it was once a month. Business consultations, youth programs. That's the Genius Bar where you go talk to the people there. You go online, say, I want to make a reservation. They tell you what to do there. I click on Mac. It says, okay, when do you want to make it? Here are the available spots. I said, okay, the afternoon. 20-minute increments. You select which one. Hit next. Ask you to fill out the problem, and you're good to go. You can reserve on any of these things for workshops. Here are all the different workshops to learn how to use iLife, iTunes. And finally, last thing is excellent third-party software. Because Apple has set a really high bar on their software, hey, the Campbell's rule applies to the Mac, too. 90% of everything is crap, right? That's 90% of sci-fi, 90% of TV, 90% of everything is crap. 90% of Mac software is crap, but the 10% that's good is really, really good. Much better than the Windows world, where people just vomit out garbage interfaces, impossible to understand software. The stuff on the Mac that's third party, that's good, is really phenomenally good because they follow the Apple example. So that's it. That's why that's Snow Leopard. What I think's good about Snow Leopard, what I think's not so good about Snow Leopard. I'll be going to eat with Gary and others. I'll be cleaning up. If anybody has any questions, let me know. But I hope you guys all learned something. And if you got any questions, let me know.
Scott Radiman, and thank you all for coming. One thing I forgot to mention at the break, if any of you are here for the first time or not here for a long time, please see me or Stan.